stop? Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
Three, four, seven, six, seven, seven, 1-8-3-5. 347-677-1835. Call in tonight and chat with Mike Moon. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing very well, sir. Hope you are too.
We're doing great. We're doing great here in Springfield. What's going on in Jeff City?
Oh my goodness, the whirlwind! You know, it was storming yesterday on the way home. It's storming inside too in the Capitol. We have quite a few things going on. One in particular, I wanted to share with you and the listeners,
sure,
is with regard to the EPA and their strong arm within the state, the DNR. For those who have municipalities in their area, this might strike a chord with you, but the EPA has some guidelines, of course, limiting all sorts of different things, and air quality and water quality and things like that. With regard to the ammonia limits and effluent discharge from wastewater treatment facilities, currently you can have no more than 1.8 parts per million ammonia in that water that is exiting, especially if it's going into a water stream. In the city of Miller, the municipality of about less than 700, it's decreasing since the last census by about 7%. And that's a mostly elderly population. Income is mid-$20,000 range. There's about 10% at the poverty level, and about 16.5% are on food stamps. Of these less than 700 residents, there are about 327 households that contribute to the wastewater compared to about 310 in 2014. I'm sorry, that switched. Right now it's 310, and it used to be 327, so it's dropped about 17 households in the last year or so. The EPA, though, has set these guidelines for various reasons. And in this particular one, they did this because of the freshwater mussel and snails.
Mm-hmm.
They're concerned about these snails becoming extinct, and so they want to protect them. And my question is, well, what about humans? Well, let's dig a little bit deeper in here, and you'll see why I'm a little curious about that. Because this upgrade that they're requiring, where, and I should say that in the measurements, the ammonia levels are about 1.84 parts per million. Remember the standard, the upper, yes, and the upper limit is 1.80. So that's a whopping 0.04 parts per million above the EPA standard is the highest limit. Not a whole lot, but they apparently think that's enough to require the city to invest in an upgrade at the tune of about $1.5 million. Now, the city leaders of Miller have determined that this upgrade may indeed bankrupt the city. And even if, as I talked to the DNR, they say that they will extend the terms of the loan so it'll be a little bit more manageable, but even so, it's going to triple the cost of the monthly sewer fees. So it's absolutely unaffordable. This town has had the same lagoon-type system for about 50 years, and about 27 years they upgraded, put in another lagoon, so it's a double lagoon system now. And as I mentioned, the implementation of the new EPA ammonia criteria as of August 2013 They did that so that they could protect the snails and the freshwater mussels. And I'm all for protecting the environment. If something's not working, as it should anyway, corrections ought to be made so that it can be up to snuff. But I propose that the DNR take a city-by-city approach with the standards that they're implementing, not just a shotgun approach in the way that they're doing this, because if they came down to Miller, they would actually see that it's not harming the environment, because where this water enters into the stream at Stall Creek, there are live fish right at the mouth of it. And so they're not being harmed. And so what can be done about this? We had some meetings with the DNR, and they gave us their game plan. And so I decided that really to hit it home where it needs to be, that we need to take some funds away from them. So in the House Bill 2006, they have $204 million plus some change there that the DNR will use to loan back to the people in the municipality so that they can upgrade their facilities and then pay back to the DNR with interest. This $204 million is coming from the federal government. And, of course, we all know they can't afford that because it's our money anyway. But they're just printing more, and it's just causing us to go deeper and deeper into debt. Now, especially when these systems are working relatively well. And so I filed an amendment late Monday that would defund this particular portion, the $204 million. And on Tuesday, we were hearing the budget bills, and we took our seats at about 10 o'clock in the morning. One of the other representatives said, "Hey, DNR folks want to see you outside." So I made my way into the hallway, and there are these three individuals from the DNR, nice as can be. I have no problem with their personality as individuals. But they came to me and said, "So we heard your plight about Miller, and we want you to know that we want to work with you and do what we can to help." And I said, "Well, folks, all we're looking for is a variance to skirt around this DNR requirement to be 1.8 or less on the ammonia, and we're only at 1.84, no harm being done there." And so they worked the variance out. I was pleased. I went back in, and as I discussed what had happened with some of the other representatives, they said, "Well, did you get a statement in writing?" And I said, "No, I did not." So I got on the phone, and I called the DNR office, and I said, "Look, I've got to have this in writing, and this budget bill is going to be brought up just afternoon, so I need to have it before then." So the letter was written. I got it. The variance that I'd asked for was not in the letter. And so I contacted the officials at Miller and let them know what was happening. I said, "I'm going to go ahead and file this amendment and see where it goes." So I did. I did propose it, or it was already filed. I should have proposed it. Unfortunately, we only got 42 votes. Dismal defeat. I mean, it was, what a bummer that was. But we had another meeting the next morning with DNR, because the chair of the Appropriations Committee is concerned, as I am, what's going to happen with these cities if they're forced to upgrade at these costs. It'll bankrupt them.
Right.
And so we discussed these concerns that we had, and at the end of the meeting, we talked about the burn, the wood burning bill that Representative Tim Rimley has filed, and actually it was brought up for debate on the floor this week.
Right.
And they said, "Oh, well, you know, the EPA has their air quality regulations, and we're not going to enforce them in Missouri." And I thought to myself, what in the world? You can pick and choose. So I said, "Well, I have a question for you. You can pick and choose the regulations that the EPA hands down." I said, "You've got these air quality regs. You're not going to enforce those, but you have the water quality, and you're going to enforce those." I said, "What's the facet there, or the key there that causes you to stick one over the other?" And they said, "Resources." And I knew where they were going, but I had to play dumb, and I said, "Okay, tell me what you mean. What are the resources you're talking about?" They said, "Well, first of all, we got to have the staff to be able to go and actually enforce, and secondly, we've got to have funds." And you can imagine what came to my mind. $204 million worth. And so I got back to the computer late that night, and I typed out another letter to the representative, and I told them what had happened. And I said, now, they're telling us what we want to hear, I think, but we're going to have to stay on top of them. And this money would have hamstrung them had we removed it. Too late now. But in any case, that's what's happening here. And I have you might tell me what you're thinking here, David, and if listeners want to chime in, I would enjoy hearing what they what their thoughts are on this. But I have half a mind going back on Monday and filing a bill that says that the state of Missouri shall not be required to enforce EPA regulations.
Now,
if we think we need some standards for air and water and all those types of things, then we ought to be able to make that decision, but not have to answer to the EPA. And besides, the money that we're getting, I would say at least a third of it is federal money.
Yeah.
And we need to wean ourselves off of that. So unless the Lord causes me to think differently, that would be my first thing to do on Monday, is to get another bill drafted and get that going. Hopefully we can get it heard. And if not, maybe I can add an amendment onto another bill that will do the same thing.
Now, that sounds like a great idea to me. Listeners want to chime in on that. It's 347-677-1835. Yeah, that's it's crazy. I'm all about any kind of bill that says EPA, FDA, Department of Agriculture, whoever. You know, we'll make our own rules here in Missouri. I'm totally about that.
Well, that's where I'm headed. So
good.
We'll see if
good.
We can make that work.
We'll be tracking that one. Just drop me a little note on Monday and let me know what the bill number is. We'll be sure and get it out there to the people, and we'll stay on top of it.
Will do.
Tell us a little bit about House Bill 1647. Now, you had a little something to do with that one, and it was voted out of committee this week as due pass. What's that all about?
Well, I have to tell you some of the inside scoop on that, too, because when I was asked to handle that bill, I was grateful to do it. Really wasn't thinking much about the process. And here's what that means. The Speaker, Tim Jones, this year set a precedent and offered each Republican one slot. And that means that they can have one bill that they can have referred to a committee and have voted out of the committee. So they come back to the floor for debate. And I had already determined that my application for the Convention of States would be that bill. And so we had the Anti-Agenda 21 bill heard in committee, Downsizing State Government, which is chaired by Paul Kirtman. And it sat there for a little while. And then Ike Skelton, who you may know, contacted
right.
me and said, what's going on with the bill? And I said, well, let me take a look. So I called the chair. And he said, well, is this going to be your slot bill? And I said, no. And he said, well, then it's not going anywhere. Well, that wasn't – so I contacted Ike, and he was not very happy with that. And I got another call from a fellow named Lucas Stouse. I don't know if you know his name.
I don't.
He's involved with Campaign for Liberty, and he asked if that could be made my slot bill, and I told him that I already – had that on another bill, and we talked about some different options, and I suggested that really the best way to get this done is just bombard the Speaker's office with some calls. And so Lucas called back within a day or two. I think it was probably more like 2 days, and he said, Speaker said you've got another slot. and so it does pay off, folks. To call, that's something that we need to do more of. The office staff may get irritated, but that's what they're there for. And you don't have to be mean; just be nice, just be consistent and persistent. But so, in any case, we had that bill heard yesterday, just after session. at a stand-up committee meeting, and it was voted out 9-3 to pass. And so I anticipate it coming to the House floor. I haven't seen it on a calendar. Probably will not be there until sometime next week or the week after.
Sure, yeah. That was only voted out yesterday, so yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so I'm excited about that, and I know that Ike was glad to hear as well.
Now, will that need to go to the Rules Committee first?
Oh, you are correct, yes. And I think, though, because it was voted out last year and nearly made it was overridden on the – or excuse me, nearly
right.
had the veto overridden, that I believe that Jeannie Riddle will remember that, and she will pass it out successfully too.
Sure. Hey, tell our listeners what the Rules Committee is, that every bill that comes out of a standing committee has to go through the Rules Committee on its way to the floor.
Yeah. That's the kind of the vetting committee where they determine whether or not it's going to make it through successfully. And I didn't realize until this week that Representative Reed Riddle actually reads every single bill that crosses her desk. And, I mean, that's a huge responsibility.
It is.
And I think it's great. You never see her on the floor because she's in her office consulting with others about bills and making sure that they're vetted properly. So I commend her for that. That's a tremendous amount of work.
Now, they don't have a hearing there, though, right? They just the committee looks it over and vets it and then makes a decision whether to go ahead and forward it that last step.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. So really, I mean, if you get something like this or now the resolutions, do they all go through the same process of a committee, public hearing, vote out to the Rules Committee and then to the floor like your H.R. 476?
You know, that's a question that I don't have an answer to because I don't think they go to rules necessarily, but that's a good question for me to look up because I don't have the answer.
Yeah. Okay, well, I don't either. I know we've used up about half our time tonight, and there's a couple I do want to get to 476 quickly in a minute. Next week I'd like to talk about right to work. If you want to come prepared to talk about that, Eric Burleson's he's hitting the airwaves with emails and tweets and messages on that one. So he's really looking to get a push on that here in the last half. Now this HB 1647 is actually a bill that basically says we're not playing any Agenda 21, isn't it?
Yes, that's it.
Yep.
Yeah, no funds or Agenda 21 programs can be adopted or enacted within the state.
Is there a handler on the other side so we can get this? This would be a nice one to look at the way we looked at SB 613, if we could get this to sail through the Senate in time to get it back to you guys after veto before the session ends.
Yes, Brian Nieves is handling it in the Senate.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. Okay, so that's great. Okay, let's move on because I want to certainly open the floor up to anything else you want to talk about before we have to quit here. But let's move on to 476. Some exciting news this week, I guess at least a baby step forward. It was referred to a committee. We would have rather seen that in general laws, wouldn't we, than in judiciary?
Yeah.
But it's at the Judiciary Committee now. We were looking for an April 1st hearing on that. Is Ferris still coming to town on the 1st?
No, you're talking about 41 for the application?
Oh, yeah, I guess I am, yeah.
Yeah,
40, yeah.
That would be 41.
Yeah,
he due in on because that would be Tuesday, coming in Monday night, I think, and
right.
he'll be here for the hearing on Tuesday. And
I'm really excited. 41-2036, isn't it? Yeah, okay, I was getting confused there. Go ahead. Let's talk about that one real quick then.
Well, on the application, that's the only one that's scheduled for a hearing right now. 2036 has not been scheduled yet, and so that's going to be a little bit of a different hurdle to get over. Right now, though, I think with 41, with Dr. Ferris coming out, he's going to be a huge asset to that movement. And still getting some pushback, and I think a lot of that is because most people just don't understand what it's about. People still refer to it as a con, and it is not. And so we have a lot of educating to do.
Right. Okay. So do I understand that we still feel good that the first, which, by the way, is Tuesday, would – get a hearing on that?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, good.
The hearing has been scheduled, and
good.
If things follow along the same path they usually do, it would be about noon on Tuesday.
Okay. So for those of us who can't make it to Jefferson City, what do we need to do?
There is a witness form that you could complete. But we don't have a live form online. So if you have access to a scanner, we could get one to you, and you could print it, complete it, scan it back, and send it back to either me or Keith Carmichael, and we'd be glad to hand carry those into the hearing with us.
And I'm guessing Keith is going to make it up there Tuesday.
He's planning to be there, yes.
Good. Well, yeah, that'll be great. And so is there there's nowhere online we can go to get a witness form to just print off a copy of, is there?
I have not found it, but maybe offline, if you wanted to give me an email, I can send you a copy that I have online, and you could work with that.
Okay, so folks, if you want to email Mike, it is, and this isn't just only for Mike, but this is for any representative in Jefferson City, it's first name dot last name. So it would be mike.moon@house.mo.gov. So it's your representative or the representative you're trying to contact. First name, then a dot. If you've got a pen, write this down. First name dot last name at house.mo.gov. So in this case, if you want to drop an email to mike.moon@house.mo.gov, he'll get you a witness form that you can print off, and it had to be faxed now. It can't be mailed anymore. Back up there to either he or Keith, and I'm sure he'll give you the fax number and the contact information when he gets that to you. I'm confident that you could also go to what's Keith's site? It's not Missouri. Keith, if you're listening in tonight, give us a call. I don't have that written down in front of me, but if you go to Keith's website, you can also make contact with him there, and I'm sure he would take care of that for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then let's do go on to 476, which was referred this week, and that sits in the Judiciary Committee. Stanley Cox, folks, is the chair there, and it's not too soon to be hammering on these people, is it, Mike?
It's not at all. I asked Representative Cox yesterday if he would hold the hearing schedule until we have an opportunity to discuss it in the caucus, because as with those on the committee, there are a number of others who don't want to have this heard.
Right.
And, I'm perplexed by that, really, because I think this is a mechanism that has been underutilized, perhaps, and it's one that the responsibility only lies with the House. And if The House of Representatives is not going to call the governor or any other elected official on abiding by the rule of law, then who's going to?
Right.
And I've heard some say that it would be bring embarrassment to the party. And I don't understand that. If I were a patrolman and I don't do my duty to issue tickets or whatever, arrest people as needed, then I don't need to be wearing the badge. And
right.
So this is just something that I feel like, you know, it's a glaring error on the governor's behalf. And I know that Representative Marshall and Representative Bratton also feel that theirs carry weight and have measure on merit as well. So how would we be, how this would be an embarrassment to the party is beyond me. If you or someone else listening knows that answer, I'd be happy to hear it. But I don't think it would be an embarrassment. I think this is just a responsibility that we have.
Right.
May I give the names of the other committee members to you?
Certainly, yeah. Yeah, go. Please go ahead. And
as you know, the chair is Stanley Cox. And his would be Stanley.Cox, of course. And then the vice chair is Kevin Elmer. And then we have Mike Colonna, and that's C-O-L-O-N-A. Robert Cornejo, his last name is spelled C-O-R-N-E-J-O. That's C-O-R-N-E-J-O. And then I'll bypass Rory Ellinger. I think, you know, if you guys are a praying bunch, I'd ask that you keep him in mind in your prayers, because recently he was diagnosed with terminal cancer.
Oh, yeah, that's right,
so
yeah.
He's been gone about a week, and, you know, even though he's on the other side, he's still a human being. And so
yeah,
we need to
that's right.
To it. And then we have Elijah Haar. Elijah is spelled E-L-I-J-A-H. The last name is spelled H-A-A-H-R. That's H-A-A-H-R. And then Galen Higdon, I'll spell his name as well, G-A-L-E-N. His last name is H-I-G-D-O-N. That's H-I-G-D-O-N. And then Chris Kelly, last name is K-E-L-L-Y. And then Mike Leara, L-E-A-R-A. That's L-E-A-R-A. And then, lo and behold, there's Nick Marshall.
There he is.
I would imagine when this comes up for a vote, he'll be an I.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Gina Mitten. Gina spells her last name M-I-T-T-E-N. That's M-I-T-T-E-N. And then lastly, Todd Richardson. And so those are the folks on the committee. And I would encourage you. You don't have to call Nick, but, you know, if you want to send him an email and tell him that you're supportive, I'm sure he would be pleased to hear that. But
absolutely.
Yes, if you can take time to call them, email them, I know that it can make a difference. We've seen it already. And your support would be greatly appreciated.
Absolutely. I want to send a tip of the hat out to the listeners. I think that that your action helped a little bit in actually getting this to the committee. I am not of the opinion that Speaker Jones had originally any intention of ever seeing this leave the desktop. I think you folks out there listening are a small part of the reason, maybe a large part of the reason, that this thing actually found its way to a committee. Do you know all these names that you read off fairly well, Mike? Do you think it would do okay in the committee?
I was counting votes earlier today.
Uh-huh.
It depends upon some swing votes. I think Representative Stanley Cox, the chair, is one of those swing votes. In my conversations with him, I don't see him being as really thrilled about this
right.
whole process.
Yeah, I'd have certainly myself rather seen Caleb Jones handling this.
Yeah. If, though, Representative Cox votes to do pass, I think we'll have the votes. So I believe that otherwise it's going to be even Steven.
But, okay, folks.
Hopefully, and that's even with net voting in the affirmative.
Right. Okay, so that's Stanley Cox, and Stanley spells his name with an E in it. So that's Stanley dot Cox at house.mo.gov. Kevin is Kevin Elmer, that's Elmer, at the same email address. These are all at house.mo.gov. And then that list of names Mike went through, which I'll go through again before the show is over with you, and we'll make sure that that you've got all your spelling right. But I do, while you've got your pens in your hand, though, I want you to also write down Cox and Elmer's phone number. Chairman Cox is at 573-751-9774. He's the chairman of the committee. He'll really make a decision as to whether the committee even picks this thing up or not. So that's an important phone call and email. Don't be bashful about calling often and letting people know that that this is of interest to you. I don't want you to call hourly or anything like that, but a couple of times a week. How's that bill doing? So that's 573-751-9774 for Chairman Cox. The vice chair is at 573-751-3883. We'll go over the rest of the names on the committee, and then a lot of pressure can be brought to this committee, aside from you, by your representative. So be sure and contact your own representative and let them know that you would like to see this bill passed. This resolution passed and sent out to the full body for a vote for impeachment. And specifically now, at this moment, we're talking about Mike Moon's article of impeachment, H.R. 476. And that is the article impeaching the governor because he has neglected his duty to call with any due diligence special elections to replace the people in the state of Missouri who do not have representation in Jefferson City for as much as a year now. If there's nothing else you want to say about that, Mike, take the floor, and I know your time is short with us here, so take the floor and let anybody know anything you want them to know.
Well, I just want to make a point to mention that the anti-Common Core bill was heard in the Senate this week, and there were over 1,200 witness forms submitted, and
whoa,
so that's huge. And so I'm hopeful that will come back to the floor. Again, we're going to have to consider the governor's override, though, veto, and hopefully we'll be able to override that this session. All the budget bills have been done, sent over to the Senate, and they're coming back. In some shape or form, if they have a disagreement, then we have to work with that and send it back again. This coming week, we should be hearing Doug Funderburk's Second Amendment Preservation Act in the House. And I believe right to work will probably be up to it. In fact, I thought it was scheduled this past week, but we had a lot of union representatives there, and I think that their presence put a damper on that. I think it would have been neat to have heard her while they were there myself. But anyway, they were there, so it was put off probably until next week.
Now, 1099, if I'm not mistaken, which is Burleson's, he's not even calling it right to work anymore. He's calling it something else. But Kevin Burleson's law or bill actually doesn't pass right to work, does it? It sends it out to a vote. Am I right on that?
I believe so. I believe it is going to the vote of the people with the freedom to work is what they changed it to.
Freedom to work, right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. And so it I think it's really just semantics, actually.
Yeah, it's exactly. I've been following it. It is almost verbatim the exact same bill that they worked on last year and called Right to Work. So,
Well, so, and I don't see in this, as I'm looking through it once again, that may have been removed, but this is something that does not look like it's going to a vote for the people.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So it is where you can not be required as a condition of a condition of employment to be a part of a labor organization.
Right.
And the dues that you pay and all those sorts of things, you can determine what's done with or to participate or not. But and that's
right.
Got to be what was called paycheck protection. But I'm hopeful that this will pass. And there's going to be a lot of pushback, though, so expect that. And it's funny, not a ha-ha funny, but it's just kind of strange to me that these folks who are in opposition typically are union members or family of union members, and they're so adamantly opposed because I think they're just brainwashed. They've got that union mentality just ingrained in them, and they don't see the freedom side of it, where we believe that if this were passed, there would be probably a lowering of wages for a time, but we've seen other states that have enacted this where the wages begin to rise, where union membership is not required. So I'm hopeful this will get passed. And if you have an opportunity to call, I would encourage you to call your representative and pledge your support and ask them to do the same.
Well, I'm not going to debate with you on it, Mike, but I'm opposed to this one. And
are you?
Okay. Oh yes, yeah, I am. And it has nothing to do with union membership. It just has, I tried and tried and tried to talk someone into getting this thing worded better. In my mind, this is a restriction on a business owner. I mean, this is actually telling the business owner that it's doing exactly the same thing in my mind as you telling a business owner you can't consider a person's sexual orientation or you can't consider a person's whatever when you hire them. I would much rather see it put more affirmatively in that, you need not belong. The employer cannot be forced to hire only union members. The employer may consider, but your time is short. I don't want to use it up tonight. We'll discuss this next week.
I'm glad you brought that up because, and just real quickly, I've had some conversations with others who I think are on the same track as you are. And as I'm thinking about that, I could be off base, so I'll need to give some thought to it as well with regard to the employer. But with is it not correct, though, that when a shop or business goes union, the management really has no say-so in the union objectives. Is that correct,
true,
or am I wrong?
That's true. That's true. That is often true. The union generally writes into the contract as part of the negotiation that you have to close your shop. I don't have any objection to making something like that illegal, but the way this law is written, I own a grocery store. And I speak from experience because this is my background. I want all of my meat cutters to be in the union. Not only do I think I get a better meat cutter, but the union, the meat cutters union, is great. I mean, I don't have to worry. I get to, I can keep and maintain for paying a slightly higher wage, the best meat cutters in town, because I don't have to worry about their health benefits. I don't have to worry about their life insurance. I don't have to worry about these things. They're taken care of by the Meat Cutters Union.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I want union meat cutters.
Yeah.
I don't want any union people. I want it to be my choice to say, if you're a cashier or a bagger or a stalker or an unskilled laborer, I don't want you in the union. I do not want the service workers union in my grocery store.
Right.
But see, I'm of the opinion that that needs to be my call as the store owner. Now, I have no objection to you telling the steel workers that they can't close Paul Mueller. You know, that it can't be part of any contract between Paul Mueller and the Steelworkers Union that only United Steelworkers can work at Paul Mueller.
Yeah.
I have no objection to a law that says no employer can be forced to hire only union or only non-union. No employer can be forced to have union membership be part of his decision-making process. But to write a law that says no employer may consider that is in my mind, treading on the rights of the employer. I mean, I think the employer ought to be able to consider that if he so desires, but had never, ever be forced to make that exclusion.
Okay.
I need to...
study this a little bit more. You've given me some food for thought there, and I will look at it. It's a pretty short bill.
It is a short bill, yeah.
So,
and
let's take a look, because I didn't see that in there, but maybe I didn't really look into it as well as I should, because I don't see where it says that about the employers, where they shall not. So. Do you know where in the bill it says that particularly?
I don't have the bill in front of me.
We can talk about it next week.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
I'd love to be wrong on that, but I've debated this with 100 people all last session and all this session, and I don't think I am, but I would love to find out I am wrong on that.
I could be as well. So I'm willing to take a look at it and. You know, I'm not perfect, as you know. So,
nah, pretty close though.
If there's a part that in this that can be enhanced, that's what we want to do. And
absolutely,
amend it. Yeah.
No, I know. I'm, you know, the idea of it, the idea that's behind RTW, I am 100% for. I do not think anybody. Should be forced to close any, you know, when I look at it as the rights of the employer more than anything else, I don't think any employer should be forced to close his shop,
right.
You know, for fear of the union. But we'll talk about that next week. You've got to go. I know. I appreciate your time more than you know, and the listeners appreciate you. We hope to get some movement there in the Judiciary Committee. We hope to help you out a little bit there. I'll be talking about that later after you're gone. Again, I'll read that list of names, make sure everybody's got their pens out and get the spelling right, and we'll get those letters moving again. Thank you very much, Mike, and we'll talk to you next week, we hope. You're going to be with Matt in the morning?
I'm still planning to be. If everything works out well, I'll be there in the morning. And I appreciate you so much for allowing me to spend time on Fridays with you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate everything you do, Mike.
Thank you, sir.
A great night.
And you too. Bye-bye.
Good night, sir. Okay, that was Mike Moon, Representative Mike Moon. And this guy has got it right. I mean, I go through the list of all the bills that have been introduced, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bills that have been introduced in this session. And I see the same names over and over and over and over again, people who are just introducing bill after bill after bill after bill, and most of it is just picayune crap. I mean, literally, go to house.mo.gov or senate.mo.gov for that matter, but house.mo.gov, because there's so many more people on that side, and so there's that many more bills. And click on the bill list. And my gosh, just page down through that thing, and you'll see the same names appearing over and over and over again, and read the stuff that these people are introducing. And fully 80% of it is just crap, And then you go down and you find a guy like Mike Moon, who's introduced, I think, three bills this session. One is the Anti-Agenda 21, which is truly a liberty lover's bill. One is the Convention of the States, and one is the impeachment of Governor Nixon. I mean, how much more spot on can you get right there? How much more, yeah, I dare use the word libertarian, can you get than these three bills? And now he's going to introduce a bill next week that keeps the EPA out of the state of Missouri. My gosh, if a person can only introduce four pieces of legislation in a year, and those four were bullets like that, I'd take that any day of the week. You folks who are represented by Mike Moon, you got a good one there. Okay, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. It's going to be free speech night. So if you want to get in on whatever it is that you want your favorite topic of the night to be, it's 347-677-1835.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
We are talking about H.R. 476, introduced by Mike Moon, articles of impeachment against Governor Nixon for his failure to carry out his constitutional duty to, at the earliest possible time, call a general election to replace empty seats, to fill empty seats in the Senate and the House of Representatives. We've got 500,000 Missourians, a little bit more than that, who have not had representation in Jefferson City in a critical session. we have a governor who is using politics, who is circumventing the people of the state of Missouri, who put a Republican majority in both houses by appointing Republicans to state positions to get them out of the House and Senate, and then leaving those seats vacant for far too long, who has a constitutional obligation to fill those seats. That has been referred to judiciary. We're going to go over the people you need to contact on that in just a moment. But before we do, I want to take an aside and say that also on the same day referred to the judiciary are two other articles of impeachment. Now, these don't garner as much favor with me as the one that Mike presented, but one was presented by Nick Marshall. And that's H.R. 380, if you're writing that down, H.R. 380. And that is an article of impeachment against the governor for using executive action to edict that people in a same-sex marriage who are legally married, having been married in a state where same-sex marriage is legal, and then who become Missouri residents or who owe, for some reason, Missouri income tax, maybe just because they work here in the state, they can file a joint return. Even though the Missouri Constitution refuses to recognize marriage as anything but between two people of the opposite sex. Now, I don't have a problem with that. I think that article of impeachment stands on a little bit shakier ground until the legislature does something to sever the federal and state income tax systems, because the Missouri statutes also say that if you are married and if you file a joint federal return, you must file a joint state return. So until, and there's no reason the legislature cannot go in and fix that. And at that point, then this is a solid article of impeachment. And then also on the same day referred was H.R. 923, Rick Bratton's article of impeachment for the governor not taking the necessary actions in over a year to ensure that there was swift and just punishment for the people in Department of Revenue and in the State Highway Patrol who released those CCW names to the federal government in violation of Missouri law. They broke the law. They were lawbreakers. The people at DOR were lawbreakers. They were criminals. The people at the State Highway Patrol were criminals when they did that, because they violated directly a Missouri law, a clear Missouri law that said they could not release those names. So all three of those articles of impeachment have been referred to the Judiciary Committee. I personally like Mike's best because it strikes at the very heart of what the constitutional republic is, a representative government. It strikes directly at the elitist attitude of a governor who says, I don't care, not only I don't care that these people don't have representation, but I have, in several of these cases, arranged it so these people don't have representation. So anyway, the chairman of that committee needs a phone call and an email a couple of times a week from you. His phone number, his name is Stanley Cox, S-T-A-N-L-E-Y-C-O-X. His phone number is 573-751-9774. And his email is Stanley, S-T-A-N-L-E-Y, dot Cox, C-O-X, at house.mo.gov. The vice chair of that committee is Kevin Elmer, K-E-V-I-N-E-L-M-E-R. Kevin Elmer's phone number is 573-751-3833. Email kevin.elmer at house.mo.gov. I'm going to read you and spell you the names of the rest of the members of the committee that need to be at least emailed. I wouldn't say you need to email and call each one of these, but they need to at least be emailed. So we're talking about a 15 or 20 minute job here for you to sit down and email all these people. This is imperative. Mike, M-I-K-E, Colonna, C-O-L-O-N-A, Mike Colonna. In every case here, the email is at house.mo.gov, and the addressee is the person's first name with a dot and then their last name. So in this case, it would be Mike.Colonna at house.mo.gov. I'm not going to do that whole thing for every name. It is the first name dot last name at house.mo.gov. Then you get Robert Cornejo, R-O-B-E-R-T, C-O-R-N-E-J-O. Then you get Elijah Har, E-L-I-J-A-H, Har, H-A-A-H-R. Now I'm going to respell that one so that you don't look at your paper and think you made a mistake. Elijah, E-L-I-J-H, Har, H-A-A-H-R. You have Galen Higdon, G-A-L-E-N, last name H-I-G-D-O-N. You have Chris Kelly, C-H-R-I-S, K-E-L-L-Y. You have Mike Lira, M-I-K-E-L-E-A-R-A. You have Nick Marshall, N-I-C-K, M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L. You have Gina Mitten, G-I-N-A. Gina, G-I-N-A. Mitten, M-I-T-T-E-N. And finally, Todd Richardson, T-O-D-D-R-I-C-H-A-R-D-S-O-N. All of these people sit on the House Judiciary Committee. They all need to be told that you want H.R. 476 to get a hearing and voted out of committee in the positive as quickly as possible. So don't be bashful. Send them an email twice a week. Give Cox and Elmer a call twice a week. And keep them moving in the right direction on H.R. 476, Mike Moon's Articles of Impeachment. I'm going to call it a night then. At an hour tonight, if no one wants to call and chat about something, please do these. If you go to Missouri Grassroots Coalition's Facebook page or my Facebook page, David Court, C-O-R-T, you'll find this list of names with emails and phone numbers. So if you didn't have a pencil on you, if you're in your car listening, if you're mobile, just couldn't write that down, go to my Facebook page or the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Facebook page, and you'll find those things. Let's get that moving. Your letters, your calls got this thing into a committee, so let's get that done this week. I'll see you next time. We'll talk to Mike Moon again next week. We'll see how things are going. He always tends to have a busy week, so we'll be looking forward to something new and fun from him next week. Until then, just learn to be still.
There are so many contradictions in all these messages we send. How do I get out of here? Where do I fit in? Though the world is torn and shaking, even if your heart is breaking, it's waiting for you to awaken. Someday you will learn to be.